Welcome to episode 395 of the Thunder Underground podcast. Trent here as always, and this week we've got another great one for you because Mike Mostert and Tony Covino of the band In Theory have returned to the podcast. Both Mike and Tony have been on here multiple times, so I'm always glad to have them on. Great to have them back because they've always got great music to promote, tons of stuff to talk about, so all that will be coming up here very soon. But before I talk to Mike and Tony, I need to let you know who sponsors this podcast. And that would be DEB Concerts, a promoter based right here in the Tulsa area, who has brought tons of great shows here the last few years, and it never stops. Coming up later this month on April 24th, Faster Pussycat will return to Tulsa to play the Venue Shrine. Our friends in Dime Store Riot, who have been on this podcast multiple times, will be opening that show, so hit up venueshrine.com. To get ticket info, hit up debconcerts.com to be kept up to date on this show and other shows. Hit up DEB Concerts on their socials, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram is all at DEB Concerts. And of course, we bring you news here. Some news that was just announced this past week. The Rocklahoma lineup. DEB Concerts books the Roadhouse stage at Rocklahoma every year. This year, of course, is no different. This year, DEB Concerts has brought Tom Kiefer in to be the pre-party headliner on Thursday night at Rocklahoma. If you have a 3-day ticket, you can come out there to the pre-party as well. And in the other three nights at the Roadhouse stage, the headliners will be Winger, Vixen, and the Atomic Punks. If you're not familiar with the Atomic Punks, they are a long-running Van Halen tribute band going back to the 90s. Michael Starr, who fronts Steel Panther, was the original vocalist of Atomic Punks. Fantastic, fantastic band. You won't be disappointed. Rocklahoma.com to find out more information on all the other artists performing as well. And hit up DEB Concerts and tell them you heard about them right here on Thunder Underground. We've also got Sunset Tattoo, a tattoo shop located in Midtown Tulsa. Their tattoos are done getting proper. They're native owned. They have three artists on staff, one of which is a female artist. You can call, text, message ahead of time to set up an appointment to go in to talk about what work you're looking to have done. They also accept walk-ins. They've got tons of work that you can check out on their socials, Sunset Tattoo on both Instagram and Facebook. Hit them up. Tell them you heard about them right here on Thunder Underground. I'm giving you my word that I've had a couple tattoos done by Jake at Sunset Tattoo, and I'm very happy with them. I know that you will be as well. So hit them up and let them know where you heard about them. All right, so In Theory put out an album in 2022, self-titled album that has 9 great tracks. You can check that album out by going to their website, intheoryoriginal.com, to check out the music there. You can also purchase there. You can also purchase music anywhere music is heard. That's something we're going to talk about here in this interview. You know, the difference, as you know, most people know that are in tune with music, how much more beneficial it is to an artist to not only directly buy music from them, but just to buy music in general instead of, you know, paying for something like Spotify or another streaming service where the artist is getting minimal revenue in return. But that's, you know, I'm jumping way ahead of myself here. What I need to tell you is that you just need to check out this music from In Theory in any way you can. You know, when I first heard them, they, you know, released the River Song, I think was the first song, or it could have been Heroes. Song's fantastic. And I mean, this whole album is fantastic. And then they released Worlds on Fire recently. We talk in detail about that coming up. This band is so, it's hard to explain because this is one of those bands to me that at times sounds very familiar, but also very unique at the same time. You know, I don't say familiar in the fact that you can say, oh, In Theory sounds like this band or this band, because you really can't, and that's the uniqueness about them. They're incorporating elements from all different styles. You know, Tony's voice can pierce you, you know, pierce your freaking soul, you know, without trying to sound too corny or cliche, but also, you know, just sound beautiful at times as well. And then Mike's guitar work is insane. You know, this guy is a extremely accomplished, you know, worlds beyond any sort of thing I could grasp as a non-guitarist, but you know, you just hear it and he kind of talks a little bit about that. You know, we don't get too deep into, you know, guitar techniques because it's not something I can ever ask the right questions about as not being a guitarist. But, you know, he did make a comment about playing a solo backwards. So I asked about that and he explained a little bit about what he meant. But, you know, he's also a producer, songwriter, renowned in everything he does. You know, he has business ventures, one of which was Go-Go Tuners, which he's the owner of. And that's when, you know, Mike Mostert and In Theory first came onto my radar. You know, I talked to him on the podcast several years ago when Go-Go Tuners put out an album that incorporated a lot of the guitarists that use Go-Go Tuners as well as guest vocalists. And, you know, Mike talked in great detail about that. And In Theory had a couple tracks on that album, and that's where it kind of birthed from. And then they, you know, released their full length. And now they've got an EP coming out this Friday, Promised Land. Promised Land is a song that was on the debut album in 2022. But they're releasing an EP that's got, as they'll talk about, a couple other versions as well as some other songs on it. So be looking for that one here very shortly, later this week, from In Theory. All right. So with all that being said, I think it's time we just jump into this and hear what Mike and Tony have to say about In Theory. You guys released World's on Fire recently as the single. Or the newest single. Something we've always talked about is the varying sounds in your guys' style. Like, how would you describe this song to someone that hadn't heard it?
It's poppy. The chorus is hooky. It's more message driven, and it has more of a poppy hook, but it's still rock and roll. So I don't know. I guess it's our own blend of having. It's like weird. It's like the way I sung the verses and stuff. It's like syncopated patterns, which I don't think we really ever did before. But it's a really catchy chorus with a really strong message. So I really don't, I don't know who it sounds like, to be honest with you. I mean, it sounds like us.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this song to me has a real kind of feel like, you know, I haven't seen a video of you guys playing it live yet, but it has a feel like it would be really killer in a live set. Does it come off as great live as it does in the studio recording?
Yeah, I think it actually comes up even stronger live. You know, I look at it a little bit different than Tony on this song, though. I think this one is, for In Theory, it's more adventurous, right? So, yeah, while the chorus is more melodic, I wouldn't even say poppy is the right word. Tony is singing it heavier, but yet it's melodic. And I think the way he was doing the verses was a little bit more adventurous, you know, with the, we were running his vocals through, instead of a megaphone, we ran Tony's vocals through guitar distortion pedals, you know, to give it a little bit more edge, something that, you know, maybe like Stone Temple Pilots would do back in the day. You know, you'd see Audioslave do something like that, or even like the Beatles would do something like that. So the way I view this song is just, it's very adventurous. It's something that we've never really done before. And, you know, even when you get to the solo, you know, I call it like a controlled chaos. I played it backwards, you know, and this, you know, and if you played it traditional, it wouldn't work, you know, and the solo was already done before any words were done. So, but it does fit the theme of the song as well. And so I think this is, you know, this is just, I think in theory to a, to a higher level in a lot of aspects, because, you know, we just keep growing and we never keep one foot in, you know, we don't want to keep going back to the same well for the same thing. So, you know, we just feel like this is adventurous for us.
When you say you did the guitar solo backwards, do you mean the order of the way you wrote things, or what do you mean by that?
Meaning, you know, when I tried to play it traditional, it didn't work. So I said, well, let me think how like Hendrix would do it. And I almost was, I did sort of a version of that actually on the River Song, where I'm actually doing the bends slightly. You have to think backwards, and I had to really take it in snippets.
Okay.
And it sounds like I'm playing it backwards. So now when I do it live, I'm trying to do it in a machine. I can't duplicate what I did, actually being out of my mind, after, X amount of hours in the studio. But so instead, like if you're bending up, I go, you have to think, like how it's going to sound backwards. And that's how I did that solo. So it's like controlled chaos. And, I think, like I said, that fits with, the world's on fire. This is chaos that I think is actually being controlled by, government, society, by so many different things. But it's a controlled chaos that's going on there.
Well, you mentioned the recording and the vocal style on this song. When I first heard it, I kind of got a Glenn Hughes feel from it. Is that anything that I know we've talked about vocal styles with you in the past before, Tony, like Cornell and Plant and everything. Is Glenn Hughes like an influence of yours?
Oh yeah,
Yeah.
definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, like all those guys, they come out in different times,
Yeah.
like they all got this spot, yeah, it was a cool song, 'cause when Mike originally sent me the Mike writes the riffs and constructs the songs. So I had like a clean slate, and then actually we sang the verses two different ways. And we ended up keeping the first way with the megaphone syncopated parts, because it sounded really cool. But it was weird because I didn't have anything written out. So when I was originally tracking it, I actually just sang those words. And after I sang the words, I wrote them down, because I was just trying to figure I was trying to figure out a part that would fit Mike's part. And I actually, like, these words just came out of my mouth, and I went back and I wrote them all down because they were cool. I didn't change any of it. So it was kind of a weird, I've never done that before. I've always done like mush mouth, I call it, and then I go back and change the word, but this time I sort of kept everything. Yeah.
Well, that kind of plays into a question I had, Tony, which is with Mike's songwriting, and amazing as all these songs we've heard are, like, how easy does it make your job to sing on that or to come up with choruses, melodies, whatever, like off of what he's written? Like, does it make your job pretty simple in the grand
Yeah, it's
scheme, you
it.
mean? Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's great. It's simple, but it's not easy.
Right.
Because, like I don't. It's kind of. You don't want to always, like Mike said, go back to the same well. So, I consciously don't want to sing typical stuff, that everyone's heard before. Typical melody lines or typical notes. So I try to approach it different ways, and then maybe that's why all these different approaches come out, or maybe different tones in the vocals and stuff like that. But yeah, but I mean, having, obviously having a song, and then I have a clean slate, but then now it's like, okay, we got a cool song with a cool riff. Okay, here you go. Make it interesting, So on that aspect, it's not easy, but on some aspects it is.
Well, I guess kind of on the flip side of that, Mike, like, how does it make your job easier having a guy with the vocal abilities that Tony has when you're writing?
It's never easy being with Tony. How's that? Now, I'm like this, mad professor in the studio thing, in the studio. So when I do hear certain things that Tony's doing, or how his voice is actually interplaying with the drums or other instruments, then I start just hearing different ideas. Like, okay, let's roll with that, or you know what, you can sing that heavier, you go a little bit lighter. It's for me, it's like I feel like, working with Tony, the best way I can describe it is being a chef and having the best ingredients, to make a great meal. Because with Tony, like you can do anything. You can, he can go light, he can go heavy, he can lean into it, he can be arm, he can do all that. So it's just picking the right feel for that particular song. It's like Tony said, it's not easy because you don't want this every song to be okay. Every song you're gonna do the Cornell thing, or every song you're gonna do the Zeppelin thing, or every song, Mike's gonna do this riff thing. It's, I have to pick the spots which I feel like is appropriate for that song. And I always want to push the envelope and then like on this song, there's so many things that are slightly different, or I felt like adventurous from, not even from a vocal standpoint, but even just like that intro is that megaphone, and there's that little, there's little click clacks in the beginning, so that's actually the drummer just hitting the side of his drum. Then we made the drummer play a wooden wall. Then we made the drummer play that we called it the glass Jesus candle. And then he played a 2-inch Ampex box, combined all those sounds. And that's the intro underneath Tony's voice run. Again, we could have went with the megaphone, but we did it with the distortion pedal. So again, that worked. If we say if you did a megaphone with, a different tone, it wouldn't work. I don't know. There was just a lot of things on this as well. I mean, I think even there's that second verse where there's almost that gospel feel that we're known for. It's the first time we didn't use the same background singers, but it still kept that feel, And the other thing that we did on that is for the whole second half of that particular verse, I just told the drummer no cymbals at all. So a lot of people won't pick up on that, but there's actually no cymbals for an entire half verse, and so there's like a lot of little things like that that I think that we should point out on this type of song.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Like you mentioned, the recording and the writing of the guitar solo on World's on Fire. Was that process where you said you kind of wrote it before it was completely finished? Is that not normal? Do you usually write the solo after the fact, after everything's laid out?
I would say almost 90% of my solos are written even before I sent anything off to Tony. I'm just in the moment, and if it feels right, I keep it. And almost every solo, maybe with the exception of two or three, those are my original demos. I've never changed it. I'm all about the feel, and if the feel just, I don't know, if it's right, I'm not going to change it. And I was lucky enough that, I was able to catch, lightning in a bottle and did some, competent solos on the stuff. But usually I'm just always about being spontaneous, because I always feel like that's what you meant to sing. That's what you meant to play. And that's what you want the listener to feel. You try to capture that, and if you're lucky, you capture it. If not, then okay. Maybe you have a couple of ideas that worked, and then you start working from there. But I just think that spontaneous is it's your emotion. That's what you meant to do, and it doesn't have to be perfect. But that's the feel and the vibe that you're trying to get out.
Well, since it's a feel thing, how does that translate into the live setting? Like I've recently talked to Adrian Vandenberg, and he's known for constructing solos that are like songs themselves. But he said in the live setting, he goes off a feel and he changes them without worrying about it every night. So like, is that the way you play, or do you try to stick to what you originally felt, or how does that work?
That's exactly how I play live. It's every night is a different solo. Sometimes it's way too long, according to the singer, it's just, I'm just going off a vibe. If I'm feeling good, or if the crowd is responsive, maybe I'll just keep going. Or if I just feel like, the vibe is this, I've gotten to see now X amount of videos of me on the same song. I'll play it for people back to back to back. They don't even know it's the same song, or the techniques are completely different. There's so many factors in it, right? So it depends on how much sleep you got, if your hands are hurting, or if you're just feeling good. But I just love improvising. That for me is equally up there with being creative. Live, I never do the same solo twice. I very rarely.
Speaking of live, you guys have, shows throughout March here in the Midwest, and then you're going on tour with Angel in May. Like, how did that whole thing come together with working with Angel and doing whatever you're doing, like 5, 6, 7 shows?
It's going to be a little bit more than that. I think, we'll probably make announcements soon. I mean, I have the list, but it's getting longer. I think it's going to end up being maybe 12 shows with Angel. And then after that, we'll see what happens. There's some other tours that are on offered, and then there's also headlining, you know, positions that we're looking at as well. But Tony and I have to really just sit down and see what makes sense for, in theory, you know. So, but the angel thing just came along really by accident on many levels. There was another, you know, interview we were doing, and when we were first setting up some shows, they were talking about this drummer who happens to be friends with our booker. And I just remembered the name, and it turns out he's the drummer for Angel. So when I saw that Angel was on tour, I reached out to, you know, my booking guy, Pat, and I said, "Let's reach out to Angel. It can't hurt." And I explained to him the story. So like, Angel means a lot to me. You know, my brother was 3 years older than me, right? So when I was 12, you know, he was 15. So, and he was a bass player, and he used to bring home the Aerosmith Rocks and Angel on Earth at Seven. You know, that album, you turn upside down, it's still the logos same way. You know, Kiss Records, except, you know, you name it. You know, and at 12, 13 years old, my brother used to call me Punky after Punky Meadows. So, but my brother passed away young, about at 29 years old. So, you know, I just think that, I know it's, I think he'd be smiling. This is like a full circle thing for me, for, you know, Punky as a teenager, be playing with Punky. Yeah. And, you know, and I know Tony's a huge fan of Frank Dimino, and, you know, Tony and I always used to joke about doing Angel songs. And when they made their first comeback, it was like 6 years ago, and we were rehearsing in Nashville, you know, Tony and I went to that show, and we were just so blown away by Punky and Frank. And then here we are, you know, X amount of years playing. And I still think, you know, one of the things that's really kind of cool with this, the day that we got announced that we were going to do the first X amount of shows was my brother's birthday.
Oh, wow.
You know, so for a guy that always, like you said, he used to call me Punky. He was my biggest musical influence as a teenager. If it wasn't for him, I wouldn't have been playing music at all. So for me, you know, it has a special meaning.
Yeah, for sure. That's got to be a fitting tribute to your brother, and, you know, an honor for you guys to tour with him. How do you feel your guys' sound of In Theory like fits with Angel in a live setting? Like, how do you think that's going to complement each other, I guess?
I think it's two very original acts, you know. I mean, Angel is, I mean, they, I mean, if you think about it, nobody sounds like them, you know. And, you know, they're great performers. I mean, Frank's an amazing singer, and Punky's a great guitar player. So on a lot of aspects, I guess we're sort of like them, but we also have our own sound as well. But I think they're both, you know, both bands is emotional on stage. Like, they'll give you a show, you know, and I think we will, and they definitely will. And so I think it's a good double bill. I'm psyched just to, you know, it's like pretty trippy because I've never met him, obviously, and meeting him, and not only that, we're going to be doing shows with them. I just, you know, it hasn't really hit me yet, you know, but it's a trip, you know, it's definitely a trip.
Well, you guys also have the Promised Land EP that you're releasing in April. You know, Promised Land's a great track from the Heroes album. Is this EP also going to include some unreleased tracks that weren't on Heroes, or like how? Or what's it gonna? Is it something you've announced or can't announce? I mean,
yeah, it's gonna be six songs, you know. And what we're proud to announce too, I'm not sure if you picked up on it, but now on a digital platform, you know, now we're part of Orchard Sony now as well, which was a huge step for us. But we're also making the CD available. That's only through our website, so you'll hear some songs that you never heard before. You know, but what was important to Tony and I was, yeah, it's a singles world and we're going to put out Promised Land as a single, but I wanted to give him the full scope of what In Theory is. So there is some heavier songs, there's ballads, we have a lot to offer. And I just feel like, if you hear one song, it puts that band in a box, and there's a lot more to us than just being in a box.
Well, Promised Land in particular, included Vinny Appice on drums, and I know throughout the album you guys had different drummers, like you mentioned earlier. Like you've got Brian Keeling in the live shows. Like, what's Brian bring that, kind of encompasses everything that this album and your music has brought? Like, how well does he, portray what In Theory is live?
That's a good question. Yeah, Brian fits it quite well. He's been our main drummer now for, about a year or so. But like you said, the record also has Brian. It also has Vinny. It also has this other drummer, Justin, as well. And even bass player wise, there's a bass player, Colin. We brought in Perry from Striper. And on two of the songs, I'm the bass player. But what I noticed, I've spoken about this prior. I think at the end of the day, it's the chemistry between Tony and I that make In Theory In Theory. When I think of Zeppelin and you hear Page and Plant or Aerosmith and Tyler Perry, and you can go on and on, but if you take Tyler out of Aerosmith, it's not Aerosmith. You take Perry out of Aerosmith, it's not Aerosmith. Zeppelin, as well, as great as Plant is and Page. Without Plant, it ain't Zeppelin. Without Page, it's not Zeppelin. And just by the nature of observing and analyzing, okay, we had this drummer, this bass player. It still sounds like In Theory. It still sounds like Tony and I, no matter what we do. So there is a magic with the chemistry, and I think we are maybe that next generation of hopefully. People will see us as a Page Plant or a Tyler Perry, because that it takes, whatever frequencies I'm playing combined with the frequencies and feel that Tony's playing and feel that I'm playing. That's what I think is the magic of what we do.
So I guess that would explain why you guys have kind of like moved forward as like technically a two piece, and at least in the presentation, even though you're not really, you've got, like you said, backup singers, you've got the full band in the live setting and a lot of, musicians in the studio, but is what you just explained the reason why In Theory is kind of presented as the two of you?
Pretty much.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I mean, like me, Mike and I have been in situations before where, I mean, listen, there's nothing better than having four people or five people all on the same path. But, and especially in this day and age, it's, there's people who have a different kind of level. Like Mike has that level, I have that level as far as not only wanting to be a musician and being creative, but you also have to have a driving business sense too. And we didn't want to, but that's how it evolved with me. It's me and Mike because, maybe in the future it'll change. But instead of trying to pull other people along like we have in the past, like we're writing the songs, we're getting our sound, we're doing our social media, we're doing interviews such as yours. We're hitting all the marks that a band needs to be successful today, and not necessarily worrying that the bass player's girlfriend doesn't want to practically tonight. I mean, we wasted enough time on things like that. So, fortunately enough, if we're starting to get more and more shows, then we can attract people to be part of the band, live initially. But that's sort of how it started. Like we didn't want to go down the typical path because I at least I speak for myself. I feel like a lot of bands waste time rehearsing and doing things that ultimately aren't going to get them to the next level. So, we wanted to focus on the important things, so sound, the writing, like.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, many bands have compromised their excuse me their growth as from a business aspect and also from a musical aspect, because they're like Tony was saying, we're pulling you have to pull the bass player, you have to pull the drummer, get everybody on the same page. And look, it's not even with Tony and I to be on the same page. We're two strong personalities, and there's a lot decisions to be made, so it's passion versus economics versus finance and feelings. And then if you get four or five people and this person sees it this way, this person sees it that way, I find it very challenging, on every aspect, but like you said, we'll see how it goes in the future, but at least, like the songs we've probably done in the last, year and live is actually almost the same lineup, so it's there's a little bit more of a consistency now. So I think Brian's done like eight songs with us at this point in the studio, and he's done every live show. And we brought in the local Muscle Shoals bassist, and he's been there for close to a year as well. And then Lanisha has been with us almost like 4 or 5 years at this point. I don't think she'll be in the first couple of shows. I think she's doing something with Jennifer Lopez, but she'll be with us on some other future shows. So pretty much what you'll see on the record or hear on the record is what you'll see live.
I can kind of relate in a smaller level on that. I used to do this podcast with a friend of mine, and when he stepped away, I just decided I'm just going to do this myself, so I don't have to depend on anybody else, schedules and all that stuff. It just makes it worlds easier. But Tony, you kind of touched on something I wanted to ask, which is on the business side. I mean, both of you guys have been doing, music for a long time, in theory is relatively new in the grand scheme of music in your lives. Like, how tough is it to promote a band in this day and age, the way technology is, and the way it seems like it's easier because of technology, but then it's harder because so many other people are out there doing it,
Yeah, I mean, it's two ways to look at it, right? I mean, there's a lot of people doing it, but there's a lot of people who aren't willing to go to the mats.
Good point,
I mean, everybody wants to be in a rock band. Everybody wants to go on tour. Everybody wants to be a rock star. But are you going to be singing your set 6 days a week in your basement to a piece of sheetrock? Are you going to do your voice scales? Are you going to practice your guitar 4 hours a night? Not a lot of people doing it. And especially in this day and age. But we are, in essence, our own record company. That's what the business has forced us to be. So in the past, bands would go on the road, get tour support, do an album. It wasn't free. They had to pay that back. So it's sort of like flipped. There's a lot of things that me and Mike finance, but once it's done, it's done. We don't owe anybody anything. We own our music. If we tour and we make money, it's our money. We got nobody in our pocket. But, and I give Mike credit for this because Mike is the driving force of the business decisions and stuff like that. We put a good team around us. We're not doing this ourselves. We have good people like Jody, and we have a great booker. We have someone who's going to come on the road with us to help manage situations. We put a good band together. So we basically have done what a record company would do for a, back in the day, it's like the band, is drunk half the time, right? It's like, all right, just put them on the bus and we'll take care of everything, but we're actually the ones setting ourselves up. And I think a lot of new modern bands are doing that now too, pressing their own records, their own record company, things like that. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know if Mike agrees, but.
Well, that was a big thing with me. And Tony knows, I mean, I'm very business oriented, and I'm very I want to make sure that I'm always hitting on all cylinders. And I'm always and he's right, yeah, I am the driving force. And I push people and I push people and I keep pushing. Even when the biggest roadblock or smallest roadblock, I never stop. And I think Tony will attest to that. I just never stop. But in this case, I also have to think strategically. So I have to figure out, okay, what are we missing? So first, do we have a great sounding band? Does the band sound good? Now, how are we going to present the band? So then, so we really made such a great team. We have, we actually have two radio team, two radio program. We have Jody and we have Tim. And we got Pat, who's doing, co-booking. He's helping with a lot of magic. He's helping with the road stuff. We also brought in, also did we bring in? And then we brought in a social media team. So we actually have a whole solid team. So we have a marketing team. We have a promo team. And then also now bringing in and partnering with the Orchard folks, with Sony. They're even pushing me to a higher level. I mean, the meetings I'm in with those guys, it's almost guaranteeing success on a digital platform. And it's kind of funny because I'm always the guy pushing. So they're pushing me, okay, Mike, we need this, this, and this. I go back, okay, I got you this and this and this. So now how are we going to do this? And we just go back and forth. So I can see us having huge success with them. But again, I was looking at a whole big picture. I want to make sure radio we're hitting, digital we're hitting, our website, we really made it very, whatever you would call it, fan friendly on different aspects. So people can come in and actually, there's a SoundCloud player, for instance, and you can listen to, you can't download it, but you can listen to the entire in theory. There's like 10 songs. So you can get that full album experience. But guess what? You go to the next page, you could buy album number one, or you could buy Promised Land, or you can start downloading digital, I think, right now it's just World's on Fire, but you'll see it in the next, Jesus, in the next 2 weeks, there'll be a bunch of other songs. So we're giving people different options. So we're giving it the album experience, the digital experience. Yeah, I think that pretty much hit it, I think.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you may have answered that when you speak about Sony Orchard, but I noticed a while back that the album isn't on Spotify to drive people to your website to stream directly there.
It's well, purposely we've only had three songs on Spotify, and we did that for that particular reason, because I really think the way the music industry works is they're teaching people how not to be successful in business and successful in music. They're like, let's get those numbers, right? I mean, I'm putting quotes, let's get those numbers so then you can get this show or this show or this show. But by getting those numbers, you're making, you could have 10 million streams and make what, $400? Instead of selling 2,000 CDs, and then you made twice as much as that, or 10 times the amount. So we're thinking the old school way. Okay, we'll give you some digital, but if you really want the full product of what In Theory is about, is support the band and come to the website. But that's what I was saying, as far as the team, getting back to what you're saying, they'll blow up our digital end, so you'll get those numbers. But we still have our website set up and the business format set up where you can buy album number one, album number two, or you can get, In Theory merch and stuff. But I did want to announce one thing, and it's going to be released, I think, starting, next Friday and the next 3 consecutive Fridays, where we're doing the 2024 remixes of Stain on My Soul, The River Song, and Heroes. So again, it's going to give the listener a unique perspective, a unique listening perspective on In Theory. And it's a slightly different mix. It's a little bit wider and analog than on the record, but if they like the sound of the original record, you know what? They can buy the original record on a CD. But on a digital platform on Orchard, they can buy the 2024 mixes. So it's giving a lot of opportunities for In Theory fans to listen to our music.
Well, I mean, I know this is an outdated question, but it goes into that. Are you a fan at all of streaming services, or as a musician, do you avoid them when you're listening to other artists, or like how do you approach that? It's kind of hard to avoid it in a sense, at least if you're just checking out an artist for the first time. But I mean, how do you guys view that as fans or musicians?
I have to be honest with you, I hate it. I hate the
Okay.
digital platforms. I think it's the worst thing that's happened. And I was trying to, analyze myself as well. And I figure where I find new music is actually on YouTube. That's the only place, and it's not on purpose. So there's a routine of things that I practice to, and I just practice to YouTube. But YouTube has their algorithms, and they think, okay, if you like A, B, and C, they'll give you D, E, F, whether you want it or not. And I have a lot of bands that, okay, if I like this band, that band, yeah, I like this band, this band. That's how I discover all these bands. And then the other actually way I discover new bands is actually on FM. There's some really great stations out there. Like there's one here in Muscle Shoals, or actually technically in Huntsville, called The Rocket, and they're playing modern metal. Then they'll play old AC/DC, Aerosmith. Then they'll play an unknown band. I'm like, that's what radio should be. The best of the new, the best of old, and then encouraging the newer music. And there's just not enough people doing that.
What about you, Tony? Like, what are your thoughts on all that?
I see it as it's not the end all be all, right? So it's not go to Spotify and you're gonna become famous. I think I sort of look at it as hopefully we can get on enough playlists where people would want to see us live. Because if you come and see us live, we could support ourselves that way. You buy a ticket, you buy a shirt, buy a seat, you meet us. Maybe you go to our website and maybe we can make you a fan and this way the next stuff comes out. But just to, yeah, I mean, it, just the whole concept of it, everyone knows it's ridiculous. No one's a fan of it. I mean, it's just like, I always equate it to any other thing, right? Just if you have somebody come and paint your house and they just come and paint your house for free, hoping that, you give them a tip at the end. It's like you can't survive like that. You can't survive. But what we can do is get on, get in people's heads where they're like, hey, I never heard that before. And by the way, they're playing in Ohio next week. It's 20 minutes from my house. Let's go see them. I mean, that's pretty much the extent of it. So that's how I feel. I mean, it's not helping. Hey, listen, if you got 10,000 bands uploading songs every hour of the day, everyone's getting lost in the mix. It's almost impossible, unless you have a lot of money or you got a big name to get any kind of traction. But hopefully, the way we're doing it and the people we're hooked up with now, we can get on some nice playlists. We can maybe find the end around to all that. And then get popular enough where we could sell out a show in this town and that town that maybe wouldn't have heard us before, or drive them to our website. So basically, it's like a little feeler to say, hey, come over here, kind of thing. That's kind of how I think you need to, instead of being played, you need to play it, play the game. But just to count on that, it's a waste of time.
Well, I mean, you mentioned the live shows, and we talked about Angel earlier. Like, after all that's done and going into the summer, are your plans to are you going to be announcing dates throughout the year? Or what's the plans for the rest of 24 for In Theory?
Well, I think it's all things. When you think it in theory, it's always all things, all right? I always said that we all want to hit on all cylinders. So, yes, there's going to be new singles being released. Yes, we're going to still be going on tour. I mean, there's dates being added every day. In fact, as we're doing this interview, I've already got a call in for some more things. But we're going to be doing all that. We're going to keep releasing, new singles. There's so much material that, that Tony and I still have to finish up in the studio. And that's, like I said, where I always say, I want to keep going forward and driving it. Every chance I get in to jump into the studio, I'm recording. But we have so we can keep, we could probably put out another two records right now, if we want. But yeah, we always I could see us just keep recording. Like I said, I love the Orchard relationship. FM's, the radios and the podcast has really gravitated towards us, and it's been really supportive. I think, the last single we were up to 400 stations. So, I just see this thing is where I see In Theory right now going from moving forward. I feel like we've been climbing up this hill very slowly over X amount of years. And right now we're on top of this hill and we're about to catch this momentum coming down, and we're fully equipped on every level. And now we're ready to run down this hill really fast and, take this next, whatever you want to call it, whatever, this battle, we're coming full steam ahead, and we have momentum behind us. Where before, like I said, I felt like we were always this fight, this fight, this fight, this fight. You know, like a roller coaster. We're up, and you know, you hear that last click. That's where we are right now, and we're about and give a thrill to us, and hopefully to the people that like us.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Personally, I'm, you know, glad to have been along for that uphill ride in a small part, and I appreciate you guys joining me once again. And I'm loving everything I've ever heard, and can't wait to hear more from you guys.
I think you've been more than a small part. You know, we can't do what we've been able to do without guys like yourself that's been supportive. You know, you've been supportive to us for even before In Theory. You know, so yeah, it's, you know, when you say you're a small part, no, you're a big part.
Well, thank you. I appreciate your guys' time, and hope we can do this again soon.
Thanks, Trent.
There you go, Mike Mostert and Tony Covino of In Theory. A huge thank you to Jody Best of Best Bet Promotions for her unwavering support of this podcast year after year. Always great love for Jody Best. And of course, massive love for Mike and Tony from In Theory for returning once again. If this is your first time listening, you're a fan of In Theory and it brought you here, I appreciate you joining me to check out what Tony and Mike had to say. And you can also check out some previous episodes. Mike was on here first, like I said, promoting his Go-Go Tuners album on episode 257. And then they've also been both Tony and Mike on episode 303 and 336. And now we are back on episode 395. So look, you got three other episodes you can check out from Mike and Tony. And then you can check out just a plethora of great episodes. Just last week, Ricky Medlock of Blackfoot and Leonard Skinner was on here. The week before that, Living Color, Vernon Reed, and Corey Glover both were on the podcast. The week before that, Adrian Vandenberg of Whitesnake and Vandenberg was on here. The week before that, Jack Russell of Great White. And earlier this year, we had on Brian Tatler of Diamond Head and Saxon. Just saying those names alone makes me feel like, hey, this year is off to a great start. Fantastic. I've also had on members of Guns N' Roses, Kiss, Winger, Warrant, Shinedown, Three Doors Down, Saliva, Motley Crue, Megadeth, Testament, Tesla. The list is great and long, my friends, so just dig back through everything. TheThunderUnderground.com is where you can find all the socials. You can listen to the podcast directly there. You can also listen pretty much anywhere podcasts are heard. So wherever you're listening right now, follow, like, subscribe, whatever it is you do so you get alerts on upcoming episodes, which upcoming episodes will feature Pete Summitt of Crashing Wayward returning for, I believe, the third time, maybe the fourth time. But we've also got Keith Wallen of Breaking Benjamin coming up for the first time, and Kevin Codfort, the producer and keyboardist of the amazing progressive metal band out of Tunisia called Myrith. That one's coming actually next week. So be on the lookout for those episodes and some great more stuff. Some great, other great, more great stuff. If I could learn how to speak right. Look for more great stuff coming soon as well. There we go. I got everything out I was trying to say right there. Like I said, follow on the socials so you don't miss anything. Anytime you see a post, a comment, anything, if you like it, share it, or throw your own comment on there. That always helps greatly because it spreads the word around, you know, the algorithms on social media. You know how that all works. All you got to do is like something, and that greatly helps. So do that if you see a post. All right, I'm going to quit rambling and let you know that once again, I have huge thanks for DEB Concerts, Sunset Tattoo, Best Bet Promotions, and Mike and Tony of In Theory. And until next time.
Thunder Underground, y'all.